from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
I'm London Breed. I am president of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors and soon to be mayor of the city and county of San Francisco.
Well, San Francisco got a new mayor yesterday. After 8 days of ballot counting, San Francisco Supervisor London Breed will become the city's first African-American and female mayor. Former State Senator Mark Leno had conceded the race earlier in the day.
She is a remarkable young woman. She is going to do a very fine job, and we all wish her the best because her success is San Francisco's success.
We'll discuss her win and where she stands on major issues facing the city, including her pledge to follow Mayor Lee's commitment to build more housing, 5,000 units a year. It's all coming up after the news. Welcome to this morning's Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. After a long campaign trail and a very close race between former State Senator Mark Leno and Board of Supervisors President London Breed, San Francisco has a new mayor. London Breed is the first African-American woman to be mayor of San Francisco, and she's the only female mayor in one of the nation's major cities.
The campaign is over, and it is time for us to forget about the drama that existed in the world of politics during the campaign, and time for us to focus on addressing these challenges so that we can make our city better for all San Franciscans. Yes. That is what I'm focused on.
We discuss London Breed's historic win and what it means for San Francisco. And joining us is Scott Schaefer, senior editor for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. Good morning, Scott.
Hey, Michael.
James Taylor also with us, professor of political science and director of African-American studies at the University of San Francisco. James, good to have you back with
Thank
us.
Thank you.
And we want to welcome Kai Milner, editorial writer and columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle and author of The Golden Road, Notes on My Gentrification. Welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to have you all aboard. And Scott, let's begin with you. Well, it was running neck and neck, and it was supposed to be taking weeks. And what made Mark Leno finally decide to concede?
Math.
It was just all math.
All math. You know, there were only a few thousand ballots yet to count. And with each passing day, London Breed's lead was growing. And it was clear that it was going to really take a miracle for this to turn around. And I think he just decided, why drag this out? I mean, conceding, you know, if there were a miracle and suddenly he went, you know, got into first place just because he conceded would mean he couldn't be mayor. But I think, he felt it was time. And I'm sure he got some phone calls from people maybe urging him to graciously step aside and concede. And that's what he did.
What have we learned, particularly about ranked choice voting in this election? I mean, there seems to be a campaign now to repeal it even.
Well, you know, it is somewhat controversial, but, the backers of ranked choice voting say that it saves money, that it's because you don't have to have a second election. I mean, without it, we now would be facing a second election between Leno and Breed in November, so a whole other campaign. And, you know, so we take care of that. And then I think the argument is that with London Breed, she gets a lot of support. You see who the consensus candidate is. It's not just first place votes, but first, second, and third. Now, the opponents say, of course, it's too confusing that you voters lose something by not having that one-on-one runoff where you can really see the distinctions between the candidates. The thing is, the passion on this issue is on the side of people who support ranked choice voting. I don't know that once this is over and we get on with life in the city that people who didn't like the process are really going to have the money, the will, and the energy to put something on the ballot and get it passed.
Well, David Campos, who is probably on the other political side of London Breed, says it elects more women and people of color.
Yeah, it tends to be something progressives like because, you can, for example, vote for, let's say, a Peace and Freedom Party candidate or a Green Party candidate, somebody who's probably not going to win, but you want to give them support. And then you have a second choice vote for somebody who's, maybe a Jane Kim or Mark Leno or London Breed, whoever it is. So, the progressives do tend to like the system.
And what does this mean for Mark Leno's political career? Where does he go from here?
Well, he said yesterday that he would leave his options open. He's 66 years old. He doesn't really have to do anything. But, I think he's not ready to rule out another run for office, whether it's mayor or, if a congressional seat were to open up, Nancy Pelosi were to retire. Of course, there'll be a long line of people running for that seat. But, I think it's unclear. I think you know, the day of a concession is not really the time to talk about what you want to do next.
Well, I thought we'd hear something from the new mayor, London Breed, and this is a cut of her talking, well, about what she sees up ahead.
My determination in terms of my policy decisions will have everything to do with trying to address these issues that we know are really challenging. We see people sleeping on our streets. We know that they need help. We're not building enough housing. We know that there is so much work to do, and we have to make the hard decisions to get the job done. So my focus will not necessarily be about what happened on the campaign trail. It will be about what San Francisco needs.
Well, homelessness was at the center of her campaign in many ways, Scott, and she presumably, in fact, she said she's going to continue the vision of former Mayor Ed Lee here. And what can we expect and what's likely?
Well, you know, before...
Anything new, really, in fact.
Yeah, well, before the election, you know, I did a story on how voters are feeling about issues in the city. And literally, Michael, every voter I talked to said homelessness was the top issue. And so there's going to be very high expectations on London Breed as she comes in. Mark Farrell, who is now the placeholder mayor for a few more weeks, he has been somewhat aggressive in cleaning up encampments, although they're beginning to pop back up. And I think that the expectation and the hope on the part of the city, people like Jeff Nasitsky, who heads up the Department of Homelessness, is that they have a plan in place now that they think is working. The navigation centers, they're hoping to get safe injection sites opened up. That's something that London Breed supported very much. And so I think that what they hope is that we don't just have a new mayor with a whole bunch of new ideas and you kind of rip up the plan and start over again. They feel that things are finally going in the right direction. And in fact, before the election, I said, which of the candidates do you think is likely to stay with the program? And he told me London Breed. So I think they're probably pleased and a little relieved that she is the winner.
Well, I was reading comments from Supervisor Peskin, and he says, I really like her, but it's going to be status quo.
In what sense?
In the sense of particularly homelessness, but just about everything else. I mean, he's trying to pretty much put things up.
He doesn't have a crystal ball, with all due respect to Supervisor Peskin. And I think there will be some goodwill, even though she doesn't have a natural majority of six votes on the board. I would say Supervisor Peskin would not be one of those six. But I think there will be goodwill, at least in the beginning, for her. I mean, she's got an opportunity here to fulfill the vision of Ed Lee, which I think she talked about yesterday. And so I think that includes building a lot more housing, homelessness, all those sorts of things.
And who takes her place as supervisor?
That's her decision. That'll be one of her first decisions. She gets to pick her replacement, just as Mark Farrell replaced himself when he became interim mayor.
Scott Schaefer, again, is senior editor for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. And Kai Milner is with us. She's editorial writer and columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle. And Kai Milner, this is so historic. And I want to examine with you her personal story, because it's a personal narrative that is so compelling to many of us. I mean, coming out of the Western Addition, public housing, raised by her grandmother, one sibling, overdosed, another sibling still in prison. I mean, we're talking about someone who, in fact, let's hear a cut, and I want to get your reaction to this. This is about her background, talking about her background.
I grew up in some of the most challenging of circumstances, and the reason why I feel so incredible about this is because I think the message that this sends to the next generation of young people growing up in this city, that no matter where you come from, no matter what you decide to do in life, you can do anything you want to do. Never let your circumstances determine your outcome in life.
It's compelling, and it's an extraordinary story, and yet she's constantly linked with business developers and people who are wealthy and affluent, like Ron Conway. Let's sort that out with you.
Well, the first thing I'd like to say is, when I think about London Breed, who's only a few years older than me, and who also grew up in the Bay Area, during the same time, when I was working on my memoir, one of the things I found, which is all about how a black family that's poor can rise into the middle class during certain historical moments. And when I thought about what happened to my family, which was that we had an incredible perfect storm. We had access to inexpensive, high-quality education. The Bay Area was having a flirtation with social and racial justice. There wasn't as much economic inequality. And by the time London was a child, that was already calcifying and becoming impossible. So when I think about the incredible determination, the resiliency, And frankly, the headstrongness that she had to have to rise out of her situation, it really is remarkable. And part of that, perhaps, is, you know, she's been tagged as being, oh, you're in bed with developers. Well, she sees building housing, making sure that there's housing stability for poor brown and black people. She did this with the neighborhood preference program that she put into place 3 years ago. She said, if your neighborhood is not willing to have affordable housing developments where you are, then you should not be able to apply on the other side of town to come into my neighborhood, which is taking on the problems of development as well as the opportunities. She said, no, you need to take care of the people in the neighborhoods first that are willing to take on the challenges of development. And that means working with developers. That means saying, you know what, yes, we're going to have some market rate housing that maybe not everybody can afford, because that means that the people who are living in on the streets, the people who are living in unstable housing in this neighborhood, they're going to be able to have access to that housing. And that is something, that is a pragmatic way of looking at things that I think perhaps the progressive majority that's going to be on the board, they don't share that. They're more ideological, and she's going to be more practical, which is frankly one of the reasons why she won this race.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, that pragmatism and how it goes up against perhaps what might be, as you characterize it, idealism, because the reality is that she has to make some new alliances. Amalia Cohen, who is her main ally, is now off the Board of Supervisors, and she is only there till through 2019. I mean, she doesn't have a lot of time, really, when you really factor it, doesn't it?
No, she doesn't. And I think the most important task she's going to have first is picking a good successor for her seat. This was something that Mayor Lee was not very good at. He did not pick appointees that voted the way that he wanted. He picked people who, you know, couldn't handle the stress of taking on a race, as we saw with Jeff Sheehy. So who London picks for District 5 is going to be probably the most important task she faces first. And then it's going to be rewarding the people who helped her get to this seat, including the YIMBY movement, the pro-housing movement, and people who want to see something done with homelessness and the distress we're seeing on our streets.
Again, Kai Milner is here with us, editorial writer and columnist of the San Francisco Chronicle. And James Taylor is also here in studio, professor of political science. He directs African-American studies at the University of San Francisco. This is really inspiring to African Americans, James, and yet at the same time, there are fewer African Americans in San Francisco. I mean, there's an equation that we have to deal with there.
Yeah, it's much like Willie Brown, where you had less than 10% of the African American population here in the city at the time he was elected. And London Breed, you're talking about less than 4%. So her black politics, if you will, has more to do with the symbolic value of it in the most abstract way, in the sense that, say, Obama was inspirational. And, you know, again, as Kai outlined, her personal biography and even London herself spoke to this and how it could be transportable and the impact it could have throughout the community to young people, men and women, young girls, young boys, that you can come from, the, you know, from the bottom and be aspirational. But I said this recently in local news that that's all well and good, but at some point you have to be able to enumerate concrete accomplishments that you that you've achieved. And even with the neighborhood preference that London supported, her record on housing, generally speaking, is very thin. That's about the gist of it. And so she's got a lot, I think, of nuts and bolts kind of concrete issue areas that she has to tackle and do it quickly. With this 17-month window she has, London needs to almost—I mean, I don't want to trivialize it, but it's almost like almost gimmicky. She has to be Trumpish in the sense of over-exaggerating every achievement. I mean, pretending that you're actually responsible for the black unemployment rate, for example. She has to go to the extent of, you know, sort of finding nuts and bolts accomplishments, those specific things like the safe injection site. That's something that she's ahead of the rest of this country on. And with the hepatitis A breakout that's going on throughout this country in cities, for example, San Diego has a serious breakout and it's spread to places like Kentucky and Colorado. Hepatitis A is a real issue around homelessness and you know, and so this becomes, again, a public health issue. These are things that if she can get ahead of, that will have immediate short-term political effects. Because, again, I'm thinking as a student of urban politics, I look at someone like Giuliani and James Wilson's broken windows approach to urban renewal or cleaning, you know, sort of dealing with cleaning in the city, New York City. That's the kind of tangible kinds of visible changes that people need to see. People need to smell the street differently and see the street differently.
Well, in fact, what you're suggesting from a political standpoint makes a great deal of sense, although invoking Trump may get a lot of people unsettled. But I mean, the idea somehow is get some achievements that you can clearly ride on and be pragmatic, as Kai said. But, you know, I noticed the head of Spur laid out a whole program for her, and just how much of this, especially in the time frame that we have, is really plausible. He was talking about, well, the kind of problems and challenges that rise to the top, the congestion of the streets, street behavior of the homeless and those who are out on the streets and so forth, but also even things like gaping budget deficits that are up ahead and pension liabilities and, well, plans for earthquakes and sea level rise. In other words, you know, there may be expectations here that are just out of reach, especially in the time frame.
Yeah, and we're not even talking about the Hunters Point cleanup.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a big issue, and that's where she can directly impact the community. So if you look at sort of the work of someone like Paul Peterson, going back in academic research, there was a book called City Limits, and that book really outlined the ways in which municipal and sort of city leaders in big cities like San Francisco, New York, Chicago, Philadelphia, find themselves taxed and perplexed with issues that are bigger than the cities that they are leading. And so this was the frustration of Jerry Brown in Oakland, Willie Brown in San Francisco. These big politicians thought that they could use their personalities to achieve a great deal. And it turned out that you needed to be better at garbage and nuts and bolts issues like Ron Dellums in Oakland than in these sort of aspirational big ideas of liberal, you know, progressive environmental renewal, for example.
Former Mayor Willie Brown used to say to me, you know, I'm being asked all the time about the holes in the streets, yeah. And that's the kind of thing that mayors really have to
give
their attention to. Yeah. We're talking, by the way, about London Breed becoming the next mayor of San Francisco. It's already fait accompli, and the San Francisco Board of Elections still needs to do the counting and certify by July the 5th, but the Board of Supervisors will likely approve at their July 20th meeting, and she will thus begin July 11th. And I'd like to hear from you, our listeners, on this. If you have some thoughts about Mayor Breed, this is a historic, not only ascension to the job of mayor of San Francisco, the city and county, but also really, as we've said, a remarkable personal story. And what are your hopes? What are your expectations? What would you like her to see? Priorities kind of outlined for us by our guests. What are your priorities? And let's hear from you now. Our toll-free number is available, and you can join us now. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. Your reaction to the election of London Breed, does it make you more hopeful for the city of San Francisco? Join us again at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website and post questions or comments there at kqed.org/forum and click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Scott Schaefer.
Yeah, you know, I was listening to Professor Taylor rattle off all the issues that she will no doubt be confronting. But, you know, I worked many years ago for Art Agnos when he was mayor, and he used to say, you know, when you're mayor, you don't get to pick the issues. The issues pick you. You know, one police shooting, one earthquake, you know, one kind of unexpected event, you know, suddenly the entire agenda changes. And, you know, with London Breed having a relatively short window to kind of prove herself, she's still introducing herself to the city. You know, she hasn't really been in charge of the city for an extended period of time. And, you know, it's much easier to sort of create an impression than it is to change the impression that voters have of you. And so those first weeks, months are so critical, and especially now with this truncated few months that she's going to have before she has to face re-election again.
When you mention a police shooting, I want to go to you on this, James Taylor. Hilary Ronan, who was supervisor and somewhat of an opponent of London Breed's, has, I'm being a bit euphemistic here, but she's cited London Breed's refusal to sign a petition condemning police violence that was in Ferguson. Now, I don't know how the petition was phrased, or maybe you can shed some light on this.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with this specific issue, but London Breed came out against Chief Sir, along with Malia Cohen, when the Rondae Mario Woods shooting. And they called for the federal investigation to come into San Francisco and look at SFPD. The Obama administration looked at SFPD, found 272 issues. I'm actually on a committee at the executive level that works on some of those 272 issues. And I moderated three of the city's debates around tasers, which found its way in Proposition 8H. But
I just want to follow up on this. Kai Miller, can you add anything to this charge from Supervisor Ronan?
I don't know about the specific petition. What I will say is I actually think the police department is going to be one, has the potential to be one of her main challenges when she first gets into office, because the current chief has been very weakened by the fact that he was very obviously going out for this job in Los Angeles and he lost it. And frankly, the POA has been weakened. They backed Angela Alioto, who didn't get anything really in the votes, and they lost huge on the tasers measure. I mean, they lost to the Democratic Socialists of America. They did a fantastic campaign against that measure, and they won. So dealing with the police department in San Francisco has always been an incredible challenge. It's a small-town police department that's trying to police a global city. And I hope she tackles it early, and I hope she tackles it well.
It's going to be a challenge, though, as you say. And Kai, let me ask you something else quickly, because the Chronicle did back her, and they actually had each of the candidates decide on taking the newspaper to a place that really had a great effect on that individual candidate. In her case, it was the African American Arts and Culture Center, and she said, you know, this is a remarkable place in terms of his influence on my life, and I want to inspire young people, and Kamala Harris inspired me, and so forth. What I'm interested in that is the endorsement, because how valuable, I mean, you're seeing this from an inside track, are these endorsements now? Jeff Bleich, for example, who ran for lieutenant governor, got endorsements from every major metropolitan newspaper and did not even make second place. I'd like actually any of you to opine on this, but let me go first to you, Kai.
I think the endorsement process depends, how much people pay attention to it kind of depends on the race and how much they already know and feel about the candidates. So something like lieutenant governor, the lieutenant governor's race, there were so many things going on with that race that people didn't know very much about. People didn't really know Jeff Bleich. He came to all of the editorial boards. He introduced himself. He impressed people. But he wasn't out there, and he didn't have a name the way that Hernandez did. So and then Eleni, actually, you know, frankly, because this is a woman's election.
We're coming up on a break. We're going to talk more about the election of London Breed. What's your reaction to the election of London Breed? Does it make you, again, more hopeful for the city of San Francisco? Please feel free to join us and let us know your thoughts and your emotions, because this is, as I said, a very compelling, historic, and remarkable narrative, her coming up from the projects to be indeed the mayor of the city and county of San Francisco. A toll-free number, 866-733-6786. Please feel free to join us. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum. And you can tweet us, Twitter handles @KQEDForum. Talking with Scott Schaefer, Kai Milner, James Taylor, and you when we return. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're discussing San Francisco's new mayor, London Breed, with Scott Schaefer, senior editor of KQED's California Politics and Government Desk, James Taylor, professor of political science and director of African American Studies at University of San Francisco, and Kai Milner, editorial writer and columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle and author of The Golden Road, Notes on My Gentrification. Let me, before I go to your calls, go to some comments, and I'm going to have each of our panelists respond to comments in seriatim here. And let me start, James Taylor, with you from a listener who says, can London Breed distance herself from Ron Conway?
I think she can and will and has tried to the entire campaign. She did this with Willie Brown in 2012. And if there's anyone had influence directly on London Breed, and she publicly distanced herself from him, and even in recent comments. So if she's not beholden to Willie Brown with his power in this city. Ron Conway, I think, is more of the obsession of the progressives. And he became a sort of symbolic, he became a symbol for the bigger problem of you know, with San Francisco we're going to have, the old San Francisco or the new San Francisco. And so I think just like Muni under Willie Brown, when I was here in the 90s, people complained about Muni every single day during the campaign. After Willie Brown won, no one complained about Muni anymore in the public. And I think Ron Conway will go away like the complaints against Muni will.
Well, people also said that Mayor Brown was too influential on Mayor Ed Lee. And that was an argument, you know, that we heard ongoing. Let me go to you, Kai Milner, on the second question from Ben, who says, what are some of the policy solutions where London Reed will be different than Ed Lee?
That's an excellent question. I think one thing you might see is she'll move faster on a safe injection site. And she'll say, you know, some neighborhood has to take this. That's going to be a harder fight than I think people realize right now. So I think she'll move faster on that. I do think she will move faster on housing than he did. And for homelessness, I'm not sure what we're going to see there, but I think she'll be more decisive than he was on deciding on a plan. Mayor Lee went many different ways with homelessness, and it felt like he could never decide where he wanted to go with it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, that she is going to be more decisive. And, you even saw with Mark Farrell, sort of as soon as he got in, bringing different department heads together, bringing BART together with Muni, and what are we going to do about the BART? I think that she'll be less patient about things that are troubling the city than Ed Lee was, perhaps. And part of it is, you know, she has an election on the horizon, but I think that she's by nature going to be more out there and more of a public leader. You know, I think Ed Lee was more of a, in some ways, behind the scenes person. And so I think you'll see her much more out in front. And I just want to say about housing, you know, she was one of the few politicians, let alone candidates for office, who supported Scott Wiener's bill, SB 827, which would have required cities to build more housing around transit hubs. You know, that was, a gutsy move, and it did show her commitment to building more housing. You know, on the other hand, we saw Jane Kim, who talks a lot about building housing, going out to the west side of town with the NIMBYs, you know, saying, I'm going to oppose SB 827. And, you know, I'm not saying the legislation was perfect, but I think that it was a risk for London Breed to embrace that legislation, and I think it does show her seriousness about building more housing.
Well, I was going to give you this third question. I was going to go ad seriatim here, like I said, but it dovetails with what you're saying. Beth says, past mayors have said they would bring affordable housing to San Francisco, but they never did. Does anyone think London Breed will be any different?
Well, you know, I'm not sure I would agree with the premise of that. There has been a lot of housing that has come online. All you have to do is look around. I mean, a block from here, there's 300 units going up, and it's gone up all over the city, most of it south of Market and the Mission. I think what London Breed, as Kai alluded to a moment ago, she's going to embrace all housing, not just affordable housing, but also, you know, market rate housing. And I think the thinking is it's all supply and demand. And the more housing you can bring in, whether it's, you know, legalizing in-law units or, anything you can do to have more stock of housing, she'll be for, I think, in a way that maybe other mayors wouldn't have been.
All right. Let me go to our callers. Callers have been waiting patiently here. Just one tweet I want to read. Correction. London Breed will not be the only female mayor of a major U.S. city unless you consider Oakland a minor U.S. city. And by the way, both Oakland Mayor Libby Schaff and London Breed are alums of the Emerge California program. That's an organization that trains Democratic women to run for office. And there are a lot of them running. And maybe we can talk about this. But let's go to our callers. Let's get Andre on first. Andre, join us.
Yes, I'm here. I first want to say that I think it's a fantastic opportunity that London Breed won, and I think that I'll just be brief. I moved here from New York, and I lived in Berkeley for 21 years, and I moved to San Francisco, and within 3 years I was homeless. And this is while I'm also a mainframe computer operator. So anyway, I moved back to Berkeley. And I've been stable for many years, and I'm just so happy about the fact that she won, because I firmly believe that the homelessness crisis and the housing crisis are strongly related to racial integration and the lack thereof in neighborhoods throughout the Bay Area. And I'm just great. I'm happy that she won. I grew up in the projects in New York. I can identify where she's coming from. I think that her priorities will be much more, as you guys were discussing, practical, and she'll make decisive decisions to solve some of these problems.
Andre, I appreciate hearing from you. And let me hear right away from another caller, and that's Ruby. Ruby, you're on. Morning.
Hi, how's it going?
It's okay, thanks. I can't speak for everybody, but yeah.
So I did not vote for London Breed because she has. I grew up in San Francisco, and I, as a member of the Tenants' Rights Union, have read a lot of information up on her, and she has a shaky, if at best, record when it comes to tenants' rights. She voted against Prop G in 2018. She repeatedly voted against regulating Airbnb listings. She was one of three to vote against a resolution to allow the city of San Francisco to tax millionaires locally in order to fund transportation and public health priorities. She voted against Prop D.
Ruby, if I can say so, I'm impressed with all the homework you've done as a voting citizen. But it's clear that you do not feel elated like that last caller. You want to help us sort this out, Scott Schaefer?
Yeah, well, you know, she didn't win everybody's vote, London Breed. And I think clearly the list that Ruby just ticked off are things that do concern progressives, liberals in the city. But I think, you know, as a couple of people have already mentioned, I think London Breed is going to be less ideological and more pragmatic. And some things that become the focus of attention at the Board of Supervisors and sometimes on the ballot are not necessarily things that move the city forward. And so I do think she'll be, you know, more focused maybe on nuts and bolts things. That said, I do think she is going to have to show some independence from Ron Conway. We sort of merged Ron Conway with developers. He's not so much a developer as he is a high tech.
He's a tech guy, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's the concern, is that over the, you know, during the Ed Lee years, the city tilted too far toward the haves against the have-nots, and the cost of housing, the sorts of community
Twitter
benefits.
Twitter getting tax benefits. I mean, all those things play
in. Yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, some people who, and probably like Ruby, felt that the city was out of balance. And I think she and others will be looking for some indication that things are going to be a little more in balance, and that may mean going against Ron Conway or Willie Brown or whoever it might be that did back her, you know. But she's not going to be somebody out in front on, I don't think, on issues that are particularly ideological.
Well, let me go to a comment, and James, so I get your reaction to this. This is from a listener named Hart, who writes, "Please stop playing into identity politics. You continue to promote London's personal story over her actual record of nearly 6 years as District 5 supervisor. If you compare Breed's record of development and building housing in District 5 with Jane Kim's, it's stark."
I mean, I think this is absurd. The whole talk about identity politics in San Francisco is simply the progressives dismissing and being dismissive of, you know, sort of the grassroots narrative and story of London Breed. I've heard people say this repeatedly, even going back into December and January and the decision not to elect her and promote her as the acting mayor, that it was sort of racialized. It seems like, you know, there's this whole idea that London Breed is all about her racial identity. Well, no, it's not about her racial identity. If it were, I mean, there's no black community in San Francisco in terms of population to be significant enough to mobilize to promote a black agenda. So she had no black agenda. She or Willie Brown, neither of them had a black agenda, even though Willie Brown appointed more black.
In fact, there are many in the black community who say about them what was said about Obama,
that's
that he doesn't do enough for the black
community. So it's usually somebody from the majority group who dismisses so-called identity politics, usually from the left. And again, the fact that we're talking about London Breed being the first black woman mayor in San Francisco's 170-plus-year history, is that identity politics, or is it just the fact that we have never had a black woman before run this city?
What about the argument? Let me go to you on this, if I could, Kai Miller, that compared to Jane Kim's record, stark, as the listener said.
Well, what I have to say to that is that Jane Kim lost her own district in this election. And I think that goes back to the fact that people are upset about what's happening on the streets. And when they were choosing their votes, they weren't choosing it based on identity politics. They were choosing it based on Why is there an encampment outside my door? Why are there needles on the street? People were voting based on those basic why can't I afford a house? People were voting based on those things. They weren't voting based on identity politics, because if you look at who was running in this race, everybody had an identity. And frankly, everyone has an identity, whether you're a straight white man like Mark Farrell, or whether you're a gay white man like Mark Leno, or whether you're an Asian woman like Jane Kim. So that argument is ridiculous on its face.
I would say, if I could just add real quickly, Michael, you know, the idea of identity politics. I mean, it wasn't certainly just London Breed's folks who played that up, but there was one thing that was said during the campaign that I found troubling, and it was by one of the campaign consultants for the Independent Expenditure Campaign on London Breed's behalf. And they were criticizing Mark Leno, and one of the spokespeople, one of the campaign folks said, he's just a 66-year-old white guy. And I just found that to be really dismissive of a guy who has been in politics for decades and has done a whole lot of good things on criminal justice reform and things for LGBT people and
not only served the city but served the state legislature.
Yeah, and my point is, I think that kind of dismissal of people on the basis of whatever it is, their race, their ethnicity, their sexual orientation, that is not a unifying thing. And I hope that London Breed, and I think that her remarks yesterday indicate that she's going to try to bring people together rather than slice and dice the pie based on identity. I don't think that's really good for anybody.
And just real quickly, I would imagine that same person James would celebrate 1992, the year of the woman, right? That gave us all these great women California politicians that we know.
When Boxer and Feinstein
came into power. Right, right. And you know, I'm sure that same person would celebrate Me Too and celebrate, you know, the year of the woman, 2017, as we have a long list of about 20 black women mayors in the country out of about 300 women mayors out of in cities with 30,000 people or more. You know, this whole idea is sort of preposterous, I think.
Okay. I'm going to bring on more callers, and let's go next to Scott in Palo Alto, good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to congratulate the mayor on the new mayor on the election and wish her the best of luck. And I wanted to share with you that over the past few years, it seems like my conversations with either relatives or friends living in, around the Bay Area, within a few minutes of our conversation, we talk about San Francisco. It's all about the sharing and swapping of homeless, horrific nightmare stories. As we go up there, and that includes like relatives that live in other states, and it's almost like they ought to handcuff her hands behind her back when she's swearing in, because that is going to be the biggest issue that I don't know how any of the leadership is going to deal with it up in San Francisco. And it's my impression as a, you know, a semi-local outsider, but it seems like, you know, the virtue of tolerance and acceptance and unconditional acceptance has now transformed into a serious vice for the city. And if people would come out for activism, would come out and, you know, like as it does when there's a police shooting, there might get something done about it. I don't know what the solution is, but I just wanted to wish her luck, and that's going to be a nightmare for her. But anyways, y'all have a great day.
Yeah, thank you. And I think Scott raises an important question, Scott Schaefer. I mean, how do you mobilize forces behind something as, in many people's minds, grave, but in the sense of really moving forward, homelessness?
I think people are mobilized. I mean, I think the voters have spoken. I think there is, whether you call it compassion fatigue, whatever you want to say, people are tired of not just being, you know, asked for money, but for people on the streets who have serious mental health problems. They look dangerous to themselves or to others. So I don't think London Breed is going to be a mayor who is going to indulge in tolerance and acceptance of the way things are on the streets. And she'll be judged by what she does about it as well. So, you know, I think that the days of, you know, people saying, well, you know, we're just a generous city and open the doors. I think those days are gone, and the expectations are a little different. And even the head of
the tipping point here?
I think so. And, you know, even the head of the Convention and Visitors Bureau, you know, whose job it is to promote the city, spoke out a few months ago. You had him on your show, Michael. And, you know, he said, look, you know, we're losing conventions. People come to the city. They're appalled. They're frightened. They're disgusted. They're not coming back. So I do think that it just – I don't know how exactly it just got out of control, but I think that there's going to have to be a coordinated effort with the health department, the police department, public works, And everybody is going to have a hand on getting people off the streets and into services. And frankly, other Bay Area counties that have not stepped up. I mean, so many of the people on our streets, probably a third or more, come from other counties. Alameda, Contra Costa, San Mateo. So I think that part of the job of the mayor is to really talk about a regional solution. This is not a solution within the 49 square miles of San Francisco.
And again, Scott Schaefer is our senior editor for California's Politics and Government Desk, and we'll get another caller on here. It's Helen. Helen, join us.
Hi. I can hear my own echo. While I'm very appreciative of the electing of a first African-American woman as the mayor, I just want to caution us against being self-congratulatory too early, because there's still a lot of social inequality based on racial and socioeconomic background. We need to address mainly the public school system is not really educating our children of color equally with affluent white citizens of San Francisco. So we shouldn't just say we checked off the box of racial equality by electing a mayor. That's my comment.
All right. And I thank you for that comment. Appreciate hearing from you. Let me go back to Kai Milner to a question that Bill raises here. Bill says, I really believe a lot of people voted for Breed because of the underhanded way she was voted out.
I think she definitely has quite a bit of public sympathy for that. And I think that action, you know, the progressives taking London Breed out so that they could install Mark Farrell, who is, you know, on the conservative side, a venture capitalist, a straight white male, if we're talking about identities. People looked at that group and said, you look like hypocrites here. And she got a lot of sympathy for that. And I think she frankly played it really well in the election by saying, I'm not going to dwell on this. I am going to move forward.
She's known sometimes as a little volatile, but none of that came out. She
none
was very
that.
Professional.
Yeah. Extremely. So, yeah, I think it did help her.
I think it really galvanized her supporters. It angered them. I mean, I was at the board that night, and there was a furious reaction. But I think she just said, you know what, we've got a job to do. And she focused that anger on galvanizing supporters. And I had talked to a lot of women, including a number of lesbians, who you might have thought, well, they're going to be for the first openly LGBT mayor. No, they did not like the way she was treated. And it came right off the heels of the election in Alabama, where the Democrat upset, Doug Jones. And it was largely African-American women who came out to vote. And
That's
I think there was a lot of feeling like, hey, you know, we have been loyal voters on behalf of Democratic politics and policies. You know, we want our place at the table.
And on that note, I have to say, I think men don't realize how angry women are right now,
yeah.
In particular this year.
Yeah.
There are going to be some very interesting votes coming out of this election in November.
Just in Virginia this week. I mean, every single woman running in a primary for Congress won.
How many women came forward against Donald Trump? 16, 17 and counting at this point? He's still the leader of the free world. Let me go to a comment here, James Miller, and get your response to it. This is a listener who writes, this is opening up maybe a huge can of worms in many ways, but is there going to be either a state or city repeal of sanctuary policy on the November ballot? I think even if the city, even in the city, it would likely pass. We all support civil rights, but that does not mean we oppose enforcement of immigrant laws.
So the question is there going to be a repeal of sanctuary city?
Probably not. But I mean, that's a very quick answer. But let's drill down on this a little
sure.
bit. Is it
sure.
likely that London Breed is to take any kind of – I mean, she's seen as a conservative, and a lot of those – conservative in San Francisco is almost not
yeah,
conservative
exactly.
anywhere else. But,
yeah.
you know, to step forward maybe, and if there is a lot of sentiment against sanctuary, which I believe there probably is.
Yeah, I mean, Anza Alioto, you know, hinged her whole campaign around sanctuary city and – tried to use it, as she said, to garner the Catholic vote here in the city, and it didn't. London Breed and sanctuary cities is not against, much like other issues, she does not have a well-established sort of record on the issue of sanctuary cities. As president of the board, there's nothing that sort of jumps out at me that sort of makes her well-positioned one way or the other.
I will say, you know, I was at City Hall yesterday and Jeff Adachi, the public defender, was there off to the side just kind of watching. And I made this false assumption that he would have supported one of the more progressive candidates, Kim or Leno. And he said, no, actually, he said he did endorse Leno, but he also endorsed Breed. He said, I tend to endorse the person who I think is going to be best for the public defender's office and for criminal justice reform. And I think in that regard, he sees London Breed as a real ally in that cause.
He was actually endorsing both London Breed and Mark
Well, it's ranked choice voting, Michael. You get three.
let me get another caller on here. Sherrod joins us next. Sherrod, go ahead. I'm sorry, Shun.
I got to meet and know London Breed a little bit a couple years ago when she threw a fundraiser for me and my housemates. We lived in a communal living house on Fulton Street that burned down. And after the house had burned down and she threw a fundraiser, I got to have a conversation with her where she said that San Francisco used to be a city full of these cooperative living communities, and it was a shame that one of the last ones in the city had burned down. And, you know, there's very few opportunities for those kinds of communal living situations that used to be common in the city of San Francisco to come back. So she gained my support after having that conversation, and I'm stoked that we have a mayor that came from, you know, is of San Francisco and of the background that she's of.
Okay, yeah. I'm glad you weighed in here. Thank you, Shen, for that call. And let's go right to another caller, and that's you, Karen. Good morning. You're on the air. Karen, go ahead.
Okay. I think what your speakers are forgetting is that London Breed was appointed or was acting mayor. She gave no indication and no agreement to give up any of her other positions. So the time she was acting mayor, she was holding on to being the supervisor and being the president of the board. And I think that played a large, large part in the movement to replace her as acting mayor.
Okay. Anybody want to? James Taylor's shaking his head.
That's provided by the city charter to allow the president to become acting mayor. So London Breed had no hand in that. That was an accident, the accident of history by the tragic loss of Mayor Ed Lee. But London Breed did not consolidate power in any way in this way. So I think it's sort of unfair to try to suggest that the reason why the progressives moved on her was that she had too much power. The truth is they didn't want to give her the advantage of incumbency. And I do, going back to Kai's last response, think that Jane Kim and Mark Leno had only a plan A to beat London Breed and did not have their own plan A to win. That was their strategy, was let's work with the ranked choice voting system as we saw it work in Oakland in 2010 to prevent London Breed from crossing over the line. And then London not only beat them in round one, but she beat them in round two. And I would argue, and I'm sure Scott will give me some pushback, that she has somewhat of a mandate. If you go by the ranked choice voting, no, by less than 1%. But if you go by the first round of outright votes of San Franciscans, she won 9 of 11 of the precincts throughout the city. As Kai said, she beat, I think, Jane Kim by 17 points in her own district. She won by double digits round one. And that
is a
mandate.
What do you say to this, James? Let me just get you a response to this. I'm looking at a comment from Jeffrey. He says, we should give props to the other two leading candidates, Jane Kim and Mark Leno, whose election would also have been historic. But what makes this election, just like all the others, is that the candidate with the most money and the most powerful political establishment behind her campaign won.
But you can't ignore that London Breed comes from the bottom, that she comes from the community, from the grassroots, from the neighborhood, and rose up. In a short time, you can't dismiss that and say Ron Conway. You can't dismiss her experience in the projects. You can't dismiss her grandmother. You can't dismiss her dead sister. You can't dismiss her sister in the prison. Those people are also on London Breed's mind. So balance it out, you know, that maybe Conway has some influence, but so also does her personal upbringing and narrative. The reason why the identity issue is so important is because it informs her thinking and her disposition toward the city. Her approach toward the city can't all of a sudden be pro-downtown, pro-growth, pro-development, and she claims the neighborhood. She's got to find a way, as a pragmatist, to appeal to both the left down, you know, neighborhoods and downtown sort of Chamber of Commerce elements. And this is, in urban politics, a real task of any big city mayor to use City Hall to manage the relationship between downtown and neighborhood.
It is a tough navigation, delicate balance, to be sure. James Taylor, again, is professor of political science and directs the African-American Studies Department at University of San Francisco. Kai Milner, let's get your response to a listener who writes, I'd like to see the new mayor impose taxes or restrictions on foreign investors acquiring San Francisco housing stock, as was done successfully in Vancouver, B.C., to control spiraling housing costs.
I think that that is an interesting proposition. There are a number of cities that are currently looking at something like that. I cannot imagine that that will be London Breed's top priority for a variety of reasons, including the fact that her priority is to get more housing built. And that is something that would definitely chase investors away and developers as well. But I think it's an interesting issue, and it goes back to the heart of something that this election was about, which is the rising cost of living and the growing inequality in San Francisco.
Scott, do you want to comment here?
Yeah, no, I think it as an idea. I don't know the legality of it if it's been tested in the courts. It does. I think it would have broad appeal because I think there are clearly.
I hear it from listeners constantly. Too much foreign investment, but the numbers. Jim Wunderman, you know, from the Bay Area Council, said the numbers aren't as great as you would think.
Well, whatever they are, I think that I keep hearing that there are a lot of essentially vacant units in some of these high-rise luxury buildings because it's just offshore money being parked there because it's a good investment. And, you know, that's not going to take housing away from somebody who's middle class or a family of four, but it certainly annoys people. And I think it would be a popular measure. If it was on the ballot, I'm sure it would pass.
I think it's a piece of a more comprehensive, you know, again, multi-fronted approach to the issue. I mean, Prop F is another point of interest in terms of trying to get at some of these issues of displacement and homelessness and houselessness. So not one thing, but many things, many approaches.
James, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you, James Taylor. Thank you, Kai Milner. And thank you, Scott Schaefer. And thank you, our listeners. And good luck to London Breed. Congratulations to her. And we hope for the best in her leadership role now as the mayor of San Francisco City and County. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeated 10 to 11 in the evening, and another hour of Forum is up ahead. And in the hour ahead, we're going to talk about Frankenstein. It's the bicentennial, the 200 years of Frankenstein. And it's not only Frankenstein, the novel, and Frankenstein, the films and the TV shows. I mean, it's also how does this apply to all the biotech and all the things that we're talking about with artificial intelligence? Stay tuned for that. It's up ahead. For all of us at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of the Minetti Schremm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.